Hello, I'm Stephanie Girk. You may not know me, but I am a producer for Comic Industry Insiders. So today, my guest here is Adam Freeman, who you may know as the host of our show. Today, we're going to be sitting down with Adam and just kind of getting a gist of who he is, why we want to listen to him, get to know him a little bit better. So for those who are new to the show, Comic Industry Insiders is a show where our goal is to get to know people behind the scenes of the comic book industry and uncover the secrets that will help you understand and grow your business or career in comics. Every episode, you can join Adam Freeman as he sits down with industry guests to unravel those secrets. Adam, how are you doing today?
I'm great. I'm going to let you take over, man. You're so much better at that than I am. Your diction is just perfect. You enunciated everything. I was impressed.
It's because I've been listening to all your episodes that I learned what not to do.
There we go. I like it. Yes, yes. That's true. I am an excellent teacher, so long as you're just doing the opposite of anything I've taught. Yes, that's very true.
Truly.
Yeah.
So do you mind us stepping back in time a little bit to the Dark Ages when you started in comics? So tell us a little bit about who you are.
Well, let's see. Me and my best friend Muckluck, we just discovered fire that another village had. No, way back in the dawn of the internet and the 1990s, I got a job in a comic book store, and that job came out of the fact that I was a regular customer there and they needed someone to step in and kind of manage a place. And I did. And every job I've had ever since then really came from that original spot. Like it really just came from, you know, people I met at the comic shop and then everything just was one progress after another from there.
So where was this comic book shop located?
It's still there. It's a place called Brave New World. It's in Santa Clarita, California. And it is now owned by a man named Andy Legal. And yeah, he actually, so, all right. The whole story is I got a job at the comic shop. And then a few years later, I bought it in 2000. In 2008, we won the Eisner Spirit of Retail Award. And then in 2010, I got my first job in publishing.
Wow. So that's quite an escalation there from just kind of working your way up to the bottom to owning. What made you want to own a comic book store?
I don't know, masochism, right? Enjoying pain, I will say I loved comics. I loved being in the shop. I loved, kind of working on the shop and getting to know the people that came in every week. Mm-hmm. Well, owning a comic shop is, you know, it's a unique experience because your customers become your family. They're there every single week, and you get to know them and their preferences, and you get to know their families. Often they become your social group. It's a wonderful experience. As long as you don't mind working every waking moment of your life. Yeah.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's just one of those jobs that you're always on. You always have to be on.
Yes. We're always on. That is very true.
Let me get this right. So you enjoyed comics from an early age. Was there one particular comic that really spoke to you that got you really invested in that world?
I don't know. Well, there were a number of them that got me really interested in taking comics seriously. I mean, like any kid, there were always comics around and we were very much a reading family. So I was always reading. And sometimes that was comics. But I remember very clearly when I started, actually at Brave New World specifically, was being introduced to books like, you know, Dark Knight Returns and Watchmen and all of those books that everybody has been recommending for, you know, a decade at that point. And also I remember very clearly that this is right about the time of the DC Zero Hour, and I really fell in love with Starman of that period. And it just, you know, sometimes the hook just gets set and it's hard to get it out of your cheek, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then you went all the way to getting that store in Eisner. What do you attribute to that win?
Well, my partner and wife at the time, but we worked together to make it a very family-friendly destination. And we did really work on the appearance of the store, the cleanliness of the store, making sure that kids were welcome and that there was plenty of selection for them. We, you know, did our best to be in the community. We would, we had a Main Street zombie march that ended up being hundreds of people dressed as zombies going down the main street of this town. We did all sorts of things. We did geek dating singles night, geek singles dating night, or whatever. I remember exactly what we called it. But we were on CBS Sunday Morning once because of this, as like a an alternative dating scene. So, yeah. So yeah, we, I mean, we did our best to really be out in the community and also create an environment that that we wanted to shop in, and I think that made a big difference.
Yeah. So what year was it that you won the Eisner? Do you remember?
2008.
Yes. Wow. And I then know. How soon after that did you decide to leave the store?
Well, so, you know, as is, as often happens with these things, when you reach a pinnacle like that, maybe you go, it's time to do something else. But really, I wish it were, I wish it were that calculated. The truth of the matter is 2008 was also the year that we had a financial crash and our business really took a beating as a result of that. And so I ended up having to get a job outside of the shop while my, you know, then wife stayed and kept it going. So yeah, started working at Top Cow Entertainment around 2010.
I think that's what did you do at Top Cow?
I was the director of sales and marketing. And, you know, just ran basically everything that had to do with, well, sales and marketing and promotion and, you know, all of those things that a publisher has to do. And that was really when I first started talking to other retailers very seriously. I, you know, I'd always stayed involved with retailers online, and you know, getting that job meant me spending a big portion of every day on the phone, just you know, trying to get them to think more about Top Cow. So
And how long did you stay at Top Cow for?
Just under a year. It was, you know, everybody was feeling the same, but it was a bad time, you know, economically. And they ended up moving all of our jobs that had to do with publishing or promotion, everything they sent over to Image Central. And so a bunch of us got laid off. So, yeah. Yeah.
It's, nature of the beast, hey?
It is. It's how it goes.
You love comics, but it can be so brutal.
It really, really can. So, yeah. So then I started freelancing, working with a bunch of different clients, basically doing the same work. And in a lot of ways, same work that we're doing now with Prana, where we're, you know, working with a number of different publishers to either help them with their sales and marketing strategies, or, you know, set those things up, or just consulting on how to set those things up. That's when I started that. So that was around 2010, 11.
Okay. So you started Prana quite a while ago.
Well, Prana specifically, the name, I didn't start until I left Valiant. So the way the story goes is Valiant is out. They know they're going to be coming out soon, and they start asking around for someone to who do they know, who do you know who can talk to retailers, and my name came up, and I started working for them. It was announced that I was going to talk to every comics retailer open. I didn't get all of them, but it was, I mean, you know, my lifetime number is in the low 2000s. And anyway, worked at Valiant for, I don't know, 8 or 9 years, something like that, and became VP of sales. And then when the sale to the people who own it now happened, I stepped away a few months after the sale happened and started Prana. And
So I have to wonder, though, like, because you started as a realtor yourself, and then it seemed like you used a lot of what you learned in the sales role itself. What kind of skills or attributes do you think kind of transferred over from being a realtor yourself?
So, well, being a retailer, you are constantly getting to know your customers, right? You're getting to know what they like. What are their preferences? What are the things they hate, right? You know which stories that you can get them to tell that are going to entertain the other people in the room, right? You get to know them. You get to know them as people. And in many ways, making the transition over to being talking to retailers instead of customers was the same. It became about getting to know them as people. And, mm-hmm. you know, to bring it back to the show, a big part of the reason that we are doing the show is how much I enjoyed getting to know them, the humanity of these people. And so trying to bring that humanity from these retailers and publishers and hopefully, you know, distributors and everybody involved in the comics, in the business of making and selling comics, I'm hoping that we can bring that out to everyone. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then with Prana, now was Prana a desire to just start your own company, or did you feel like there was a need that you kind of had to meet, or was it more of a like, hey, I needed freelance work, so I'm starting a company?
It was pretty much that at first. I knew, having gone through this before, that there was going to be a period where I was going to be working freelance, and at some point I'll find a, you know, quote unquote real job. And that's sort of what happened here. We started Prana, and we worked with a number of different clients. I think it was something like about a dozen or so in that first year or two. Then got really involved with Comic Hub, which is a POS system. And technically, they were a client the entire time, but I was really involved in that. Developing that product and developing their retailer list and helping sell and describe it to everyone. Also, I was involved in getting a couple of deals that where, you know, right now we're seeing their data come out, that I was involved in that kind of thing. Right. And then stepped away from there after we reached a certain level and started working with Bad Idea. They came on as a client, and there again was kind of their, they were my primary focus for the long time, with Prana being a big chunk of that as well. I mean, I've always kept Prana open, and clients have, you know, come in and out depending on our capacity at any given time. And just developing a team, which you are on.
I am, yes.
Yes. And working with a team of people who help us to kind of make people's publishing goals and dreams true, right? We've worked with a number of different clients from a single operator publisher who just wants to make the next step up to some of the biggest people in entertainment who wanted to create comics and intellectual property that way, working with them. So we've been really at every step of the way.
How did you come up with the name Prana?
That's a great question. I always have the best answer for it. The truth is that, you know, I love yoga. It's been a big part of my life. And a big part of yoga is Sanskrit, learning Sanskrit. I can't say that I speak it in any real fashion. I know a few words here and there. But prana is a Sanskrit word that talks about, I suppose that the kind of woo-woo way of saying it is sort of the essence of life. In many ways, it's just, you know, the act of breathing and taking life from the air around you. But in many ways, I also felt like, there was just wanting something that I didn't mind, you know, attaching my name to. But the other piece of it was, I really felt like what was missing from many of the people that I saw working in publishing was a reliance, an understanding of data and feeling the data. And in many ways, the data in a business is its life. It is that same essence. So that was a big part of naming it Prana, was just that sort of remembering that we need to, you know, keep in mind this stuff is what's keeping our business alive.
And just going back to your career really quickly, you mentioned that you worked for Bad Idea. What did you do for them?
Let's see. I think my title is still, I think, is VP of Sales and Operations.
Okay.
I think that's right. Yeah.
So, yeah.
But a little bit of everything.
I love that you don't know your own job title at your job.
Listen, you know, small team, everybody does a little bit of everything.
Right.
Yeah. But that's just it. We, you know, kind of, we're a team that was formed by people who were all curious about everything. So we're all a little bit capable in pretty much all the disciplines. So, yeah.
It certainly does build like a big skill set when you kind of have to wear so many hats at working for one company.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, and we've depending on the client, we tend to wear different hats, you know, and in the individual one. I mean, you know, we're working with a client right now where we're basically acting as publisher.
Yeah.
We're working with the creative folk. We're working on, you know, every step of the production of this book, and we'll all the way through, through the sales and fulfillment of the book. We've been involved in large format call campaigns to retailers. We've been involved with PR and all solicitations and everything marketing wise. I mean, we've basically done everything you can do for a comic to produce and sell it.
Mm-hmm.
That's not, you know, I don't know, writing and drawing it specifically. I mean,
yes.
That's about it. Yeah, about all we have.
Talking about that, I'm very curious. Have you ever written or drawn your own comic?
No, I have not. Well, not any that you're going to see.
But
no, I've never actually done that part. But there is legitimately no other step in the operation that I don't have some experience in, expertise. Yeah.
Yeah. Have you ever come up with an idea?
Plenty of ideas.
Okay. You've just never executed any of them.
For myself.
What's the holdout?
For other companies, I think, you know, I've said, you know, this is a, here's an idea we could do. And part of it is part of your job in working in those kinds of companies is to say, you know, well, what about this? What about that?
Mm-hmm.
And eventually coming up with, you know, stories that are out there. So there are plenty of comics that are out there with my ideas in them.
Right.
I just never, not in the same way that you, an accomplished writer that you are, haven't sat down and said, okay, this is mine. I'm going to develop it.
Right.
I'm going to write it. It has always been in service of the company or the project. So
yeah. And so you mentioned writing. Does that mean like you have no artistic talent at all? I want to see an Adam Freeman drawn comic.
You really don't.
Are you
really
sure?
Don't. I'm sure you really don't.
I could sell that. It'd be like Eisner winning.
Sure.
Adam Freeman drew this like 4x4 panel. Like, it'll be great.
Yeah. Okay.
Auction that off next San Diego Comic Con.
I'm good.
So you worked with a lot of people then, it sounds like, over the years. Have
sure.
you ever had instances kind of in your career that kind of were like major hiccups in the comic book industry?
Oh, sure. I mean, you know, we've worked with a client who went through a tragic bankruptcy, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's, you know, that kind of, and seeing how that goes down, from the inside is part of what, you know, is part of the training to succeed. Also have seen, you know, I've worked with a company that was sold for, you know, 9 figures, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the whole spectrum that has, I think, had experience in. So yeah, there have been plenty of failures. The only way to succeed is to fail a lot, you know, fail a lot and fail as quickly as possible and with as least amount of damage as possible.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So then would you say like, cause the world of comics is evolving and changing so much, and you've seen that like being on both the publisher side and now coming in and doing things like Kickstarters, would you say, and we're seeing a lot of publishers doing Kickstarters themselves.
Sure.
Would you say that like Kickstarters is the future of comics, or what is your opinion on the Kickstarter world?
So, I mean, my opinion evolves on an ongoing basis, but I've been involved at the number of Kickstarters now, many of them very successfully, all the way through fulfillment. And I can say that I think that there is a place for crowdfunding inside inside of the ecosystem of comics. And I really do genuinely believe that many of these campaigns are what build an audience that audience tends to find it elsewhere.
Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, I don't think you can look at campaigns like Berserker from Boom and think that would have done nearly what it did in the direct market and in the book market. It wouldn't have done nearly that if it didn't have that Kickstarter, like, you know, explosion up front.
Yeah.
I think Boom, they did an excellent job of showing that was a viable option for promoting. Part of the problem is when you're starting something from zero, You have to, you know, create the audience from scratch. And if nobody really knows who you are, you really need to find as a low impact way of kind of building that sort of crowd, that contact list. And Kickstarter is a great way to do that. Crowdfunding is a great way to do that. Zoop is a great way to do that. Mm-hmm. Like it's really just about how are we reaching the audience? And then once we have their attention, what is the story we're telling? How are we drawing them into the narrative that we're trying to build, not only with this particular story, but with the story of our company and the story of our creativity? So
I kind of want to follow up with that question. How do you think retailers fit into the world of crowdfunding then? Like, do you, with kind of getting rid of that direct market approach?
I don't think you're getting rid of it.
No, okay.
I would push back on that. I think that crowdfunding is, I think can be, and I would argue should be, a really excellent way to build an audience for those retailers. And many times you're in crowdfunding, you're selling a product to some fans, a small number of fans, that is a premium product, premium version of that product that most stores would not want to have in their inventory. They might special order it for a consumer, but they wouldn't want to have it on the shelf because if it didn't sell, it's, you know, a high-end item. Mm-hmm. So we're seeing that. And I would, and again, like I said, with using that Berserker example, you need to build the audience in a way. You need to get people thinking about this book that is exciting, so that when the time comes and you're soliciting to the comic shops, they've heard of it, right? Maybe they didn't back it, or maybe they liked it so much they want both versions, or maybe you're doing a whole different thing with this now in the direct market. I think that there's a place for it in the ecosystem that isn't about removing retailers from that. I'd really be interested to see retailers even get involved in Kickstarters themselves.
Yeah.
You know, they know about sales as well as many of us on the publishing side. It would be interesting to see them make arrangements with publishers to create this. We've seen a whole lot for retailers doing exclusive covers, right? The way you go to a publisher and you say, I want an exclusive cover on this book. I could definitely see some way in this sort of ecosystem where a retailer gets a vision for a version of this product, goes to the publisher, says, "Hey, or we want to create a special version of this, but we want to kickstart it ourselves." And I can totally see that scenario playing out. So I think it's really about retailers seeing the opportunity, I think. And as a publisher, you don't want to kill that market. You don't want to kill the golden goose, you know, while you're also over here trying to build on top of it. You don't want to, like, nobody wants to put the retailers out of the equation, but you can find that synthesis. You can find that place where it works for both.
Yeah, and I have seen tiers on a couple of Kickstarters and crowdfundings where they have like a realtor level where you can get a bunch of books at a cheaper price to be able to sell them in your store.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And you know, there's no reason for us to not use that tool. And I know that Zoop has some really interesting like ongoing ways of continuing to sell those books, almost as like a micro distributor. So I think that there are plenty of places for retailers to play in this ecosystem.
Yeah, they just got to be integrated, I think, a little bit better just for people to be more aware of them or just how they can coexist essentially in the world of comics.
Yeah, or, you know, I mean, also retailers are, man, they're, you ever wanted to be, I mean, back when I was a retailer in the 90s and in the early aughts, like I was at my limit. You know, I can only imagine how difficult it is now when they're dealing with three times as many distributors as I did, and the level of complexity has done nothing but go up. So the chances of retailers often having the bandwidth for that is also, you know, is also tricky. So
yeah. Do you miss owning a comic book store?
I miss the people.
Yeah.
I do. I miss getting to see those people every week, you know, it takes a certain amount of passion for that. That uh, I, You know, I'm sure I could find again. Occasionally. Occasionally, yeah. Sometimes, but most of
That's fair. That's totally fair. Like the ups and downs of owning a
the
store, regardless of
time,
what product it is just such an a surreal experience that is an emotional roller coaster.
Yeah.
But I have to ask, so now that you've moved on and you're working with Piranha now and doing more work with Piranha Direct, do you miss things like, are you still going to conventions and doing all that networking that you used to be crazy for doing back when?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm not doing nearly as many shows as I did when I was running the conventions for Valiant. But yeah, I still do. Oh, I don't know. I think I'm probably averaging around 4 or 5 a year. I don't even think I've done anything this year. This is a stayed home. I've been focusing on building this. So, you
Wow.
know.
So
So
it's
yeah.
3 months in and you still
I
have yet to
know.
go to a convention.
It's crazy. I think I'm gonna go to C2E2 for a day. We'll see.
Okay.
I
Yeah.
don't
Have you considered Canada? Just saying, a little biased here. Have you considered Canada?
Canada,
Yeah, the
Canada,
country that's a little
Canada.
north of you, it's
Oh, our
one of the better
hat.
ones.
Yeah, I got it.
Yes.
No, I mean, they're great shows in Canada. I haven't. Do I have any of them on my radar net yet? Yeah, sure, I
I'm gonna give
do.
you two right now, either Toronto Fan Expo or Calgary Expo. Those two.
You know, we should go to Toronto, and then we could go and tour one of the printing plants that is nearby.
Ooh, I did not know there was one of the
Oh
printing
yeah,
plants there.
A couple of them. Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah,
Is that what you
no.
like to do in your spare time, tour printing plants?
Well, I mean, it's interesting. Yes, I do. I do
Yep.
like that. I have been to well, two of the three major distributors. I've had tours of their facilities. I've gone to so many different comics warehouses, all of the biggest retailers. I think I've been at in their warehouses and seen those operations. I am always asking, anytime I'm at a comic shop with that is owned by a friend of mine, I'm always asking to see the back room.
Yeah.
I like getting close to the mechanics of how this stuff is done and understanding it better, because that's how
Yeah.
you find new opportunities when you understand how all the sausage is made. You want to see how all the pieces fit together. So yeah.
That's amazing. So you have had so much experience, so many jobs. What would you say is your weirdest job that you've had in comics?
Weirdest. Weirdest. I once had to. There's a man named Mike Halberstam in California who hired us to bag and board and alphabetize and catalog into a piece of software his entire 100,000 plus collection. So just alphabetizing that alone was a
Wow.
job. Yeah. But yeah, I've
Were
done
you
that.
paid for this or did you?
Well, yeah.
Yeah,
I
okay. Just
didn't do that for
making sure it
free.
wasn't one of those like intern jobs that you have down south that like unpaid.
No, that no. I mean, I've done some. I mean, I've done some pretty wacky shit for comics at this point. That was probably the biggest
Yeah.
one that I'm like, yeah, that was an interesting thing. I don't need to do again. It's yeah.
What's been the most surreal moment you've had working on comics that you're like, holy shit, I love this industry?
Ooh. Oh man.
I know I'm hitting with hard questions that make
You
you think.
are yeah, surreal moments. You know, all my favorite moments have been about people. They've been about, you know, late nights at bars and getting to know people as people. You know, they've been about, you know, coming to town and getting invited over for dinner. It's, you know, it's really just about the people of our business that I think is really kind of, I don't know, maybe that is the most special, not possibly the most surreal. Yeah. I can't think of anything that has really been odd. I'm sure I'll come up with something later though.
I thought it was going to be like the moment I hired you.
Well, I do remember for some reason, you and I, for the first like 2 years we knew each other, every time we see
Yep.
each other at a convention, we would just decimate each other. Like we were so mean to each
We
other.
were so wonder it was so refreshing because
It
everyone else
was.
in comics is so nice to each other, so
Yes.
polite, and then we would like lay eyes on each other and be like, "Hey
Oh,
you suck,"
okay.
or "I hate you." It's like, "What are you doing here? Stop
What are you
following me
doing?
around."
Stop. What is your problem? Seriously. It's just, I mean, everywhere I go, Steph, 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 Steph. I just,
Every
yeah.
convention, every conve I could
Yeah, I
not
know.
get rid of Adam Freeman. But
Yeah.
now
Yeah.
we're here working together. We've somehow two opposites.
Somehow, it's been this long anti-love affair of ours, yep, that has led us to this day of being able, absolutely, to build something special.
and we are building something special. So let's go into that. Let's talk about Comic Industry Insiders. So
okay,
tell me why you wanted to do this show.
Well, like I said, I think at first, if you look at our first episode with Mark Bowker, you can get a feeling for it. At first, I thought it was just going to be a way to give retailers something and say, here's what's going on.
Yep.
And as we started doing these interviews, and we've got 12, 13 of these that we're working on.
Yeah, some 12 right now. Fashion. Yep.
We've got four. Or we just dropped today, as we're recording this, we just dropped our fourth. With Jen Haynes. It's an amazing interview. I really enjoyed that one. Anyway, after a while, we started getting into this pattern where I realized getting to know them and getting to know their story and kind of seeing behind the work is what was really the most interesting. And as a result of that, I think you end up hearing so much about, you know, what makes them special and what makes them work, that you end up learning so much about how to do whatever it is that they're doing and how the tools that you can take to your own work. So I think that's the thing that really inspires me about this, and the thing that's really given me a whole lot of creative juice is that piece of, you know, just getting to know them as people. Mm-hmm. Because all the comics industry is, right, is just people who are so passionate about comics. The thing that they don't say is that, you know, the amount of hard work and intelligence and charm and whatever else, creativity that it takes to make it in comics means you could probably be making so much more almost anywhere else. Mm-hmm. But we all stay here and we all fight it out because we love this medium and we love the industry. So getting to know them and seeing that passion is just, you know, it's become my favorite part of this whole gig.
Excellent. Yeah. Well, it's good. That's good, because I'm going to keep producing it. So we're going to have a lot more interviews for you to do.
I mean, we've got some real doozies coming up, too. I'm really excited about a few people on the list.
Yeah.
I can't wait to start talking about them.
I do want to kind of go into like who you are as a person now that we've kind of talked about your career and the show and Wim Wolf's show. So tell us a little bit like about who Adam Freeman is, though. Like, why do we care what you have to say?
I mean, we don't. That's why I'm talking to other people. That's why, you know, who am I? I'm a kid from Texas who lived in California and then New York. A lifelong comics fan. I'm a father of three. Mm-hmm. I, you know, have a wife that I've been with now for a little over a decade. I live in Brooklyn. I'm not sure. I do a lot of yoga, and then occasionally I play the ukulele at night to relax. There you go. That's everything you need to know about me.
Yeah. I did not know about the ukulele thing. You've never pulled that out at a convention.
Well, you know, nobody wants to be that guy.
Everyone wants to see this guy. Everyone wants to. Just like, it's like 2 a.m. It's super late at night. Everyone's like, they're last call. And then Adam Freeman pulls out the ukulele and just like starts strumming. Nobody, what's not to love about that?
Nobody wants that. No,
everyone
wants that.
I think it's a networking dream.
We'll see.
We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. Next time I come to a Canadian convention, I'll bring along the ukulele and we'll see.
Please
how it
do.
Goes.
Customs will love that. They'll be like, sure. Are you performing a show? And you'll be like, yes.
No, I have learned you have to be very careful when you're going over the border.
Absolutely. Be very, very careful. Because Valiant has done a show in Canada.
We did multiple shows in Canada. Yep. We did Toronto. We did Calgary.
And I believe that was how we met, was in Calgary.
I think so, too. Yeah.
Way back when we were enemies.
Yeah, I know. Those were really better times, weren't they?
They were. Before we had to like start to, you know, HR got involved. We started working together. It
Seeing
went bad.
You on just such a regular basis.
Yeah, ugh. It's pretty tough. I know.
Well, you know.
But we appreciate you for it.
We work through it. We play.
We
through
do
it because we love the work. You know, really.
Because we both genuinely love comics, and I think that's what's so great about kind of like having you as the face of the show is because you can definitely see your passion, not just for people, but for the medium itself. When you do talk to people, you are very interested in what they have to say and the advice they have to say. And you're good about like digging for that information.
Thank you. That might be the nicest thing you've ever said about me. I assumed you were going to say that the best part about having me as the face of the show is that by comparison, I make everyone else look so much better.
Yeah, that was going to be part two. This is a follow-up. I say the nice thing first. I cut that from the episode so no one will ever actually hear it.
Because
perks of being a producer. Yeah.
Gotcha.
I'm going to go on a power trip.
I love it. So I will tell you that as of today, I was reading comics, but it was a script for a book that we're working on called The Future Is.
Yeah.
That's coming out through Rekka Publishing. And I'm super excited about this thing. It's about telling us, it's a cybersecurity firm. They're putting out this book about the future of hacking. And and it's set 30 years in the future. And it's, I'm really excited about this book. I'm really getting to love these characters. So.
Yeah, and we'll make sure that the Kickstarter will be included in the show notes for people who do want to follow along so they can back it. So click down below for that, for all you nerds down there. So tell me a little bit about Rekka Publishing, because they're one of your current clients, are they not?
They are. So Rekka Publishing came out, I was the brainchild of a man named Jason Blanchard, who anybody in comics should know. Jason was a retailer, co-owned a place called The Comic Shop in Florida, and he then went on to work at Diamond and was working in marketing and actually working on promoting Free Comic Book Day. He then got a job in cybersecurity. He now works for a company called Black Hills Information Security, who is they teach people ethical hacking and cybersecurity and how to protect yourself from hackers. And as a part of that, they started making comics to promote their line of classes. And they've made a couple and then brought us in to say, hey, we want to really take this seriously. So The Future is their first major production. And it's written by Fred Van Lente, multi New York Times bestseller, Fred Van Lente. An amazing Italian artist named Ennio Buffi. But we've got Taylor Esposito doing letters, Nate Cosby working editorial. It's a great team.
Yeah. And you've assembled quite a team there for this book.
It's been fun. It's been a lot of fun.
Yeah. So this show aside, we're going to be wanting to keep a close eye on Piranha. That is correct, right? For future projects and things that are going to be coming out of the gate.
Listen, I would say that, if you are watching Piranha, you're going to be seeing us working with a lot of really great people. Mm-hmm. If you are looking for a team to help you, kind of see your vision come to market, Piranha, this is what we are designed for. There is no part of the comics publishing and sales and marketing process that we don't know. We do specialize in the sales and marketing side, but as we're showing with The Future Is, there's very little that we can't do. So, yeah. We're a full service team, as it were.
Yes. And Adam, if you could accomplish one thing in your career, what would it be?
If I could accomplish one thing of my career, I don't know. That's a really great question. I will say that at the end of the day, I'm proud of the fact that I've done work that I'm proud of. I'm proud of the people that I've worked with that have continued to want to work with me. I'm proud of the comics that we built, the comics that we've sold. I'm proud of the, movies made based on the films and, projects that we built. I'm proud of, all of the other stuff that has come out of licensing. But as far as what am I looking to do? I don't know. I get a lot of passion out of making other people's visions kind of come to life. Like, there's so much energy that I get out of that. That if I can just keep doing that until I decide that I'm no longer don't want to do this, then I think that will be a career worth being proud of. And, if I can, I have one kid going into medical school. I'd love it if we could just get that paid off. That would be wonderful.
I think you might need to participate in a heist. I've seen what the costs of American schools are. So I don't think comics is right for you.
Maybe not.
Maybe not maybe for not. That goal, but you know.
Yeah, but you know, we're making a book about a heist. Maybe I'll learn enough that I can pull that off.
Get some notes.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, Adam, thank you so much for your time today. I think we've gotten a good picture of who you are as an individual and the show that we've got coming out and the episodes we're going to be continuing to release. So if you guys want to make sure that you do follow, we're on YouTube. We're going to be on all the podcast platforms very shortly. And if you want to talk about anything, make sure you are clicking like and subscribe. And just make sure you're following the next couple episodes because Adam Freeman has some wonderful guests lined up. So Adam, thank you again for your time today. And thank you for chatting.
Also, if you have any questions or anything that really spoke to you on any of these episodes, we'd love to hear from you in either the comments or drop us a line at info@pranadm.com.
Absolutely. And we're also on all the social media platforms.
So all the socials.
All the socials. So you can follow us on there. All right. Thanks, guys.
All right. Thanks. Oh, namaste, y'all.